But I feel like if you work as a defender for a long time, right, you kind of get to know like how the system works, and then you almost start to see where maybe the cracks are between things, right? Or you'll see a behavior and you're like, huh, like that doesn't seem like that's right. And I think I've been lucky to have the opportunity to try to take those things again and sort of try to dive deeper into the behavior and whatnot. And like with unauthorized, right, finding some things. But the other part I was going to say is in my mind I kind of joke that I'm sort of like the research garbage man, because other people will publish interesting research, and that kind of gives you ideas to be like, oh, like I wonder if there's something more that maybe they didn't find, right? And you kind of go work off of that. So
Security Podcast, MVPs fight to the last. Inside and know-how, we take the challenge now. Welcome back to another version of the Talking Security Podcast, your go-to podcast for all things related cybersecurity. My name is Frans Arunurub, and as always, together with my friend Puyan Gabazi, we're hosting this podcast. And we're excited to bring you another great episode, episode 4 of season 2 in our MVP Security Insights series. So, Puyan, what do we have today?
Yes, Frans, and to the great list of the guests we had, we are adding today a great, fantastic guest, Eric Woodruff, Chief Identity Architect at Sempris, and a longtime expert in the world of identity and access management, for the people that know Eric. Well, Eric's career journey is incredible, actually, Franz. He spent almost 15 years in the public sector with the New York State Guard before moving on to Microsoft as a premier field engineer, and now leading identity architecture at Sempris. He's also an Entra ID researcher, an ID Pro contributor, and one of the visionaries behind groundbreaking projects like Unauthorized. In this episode, we are diving into this complex world of identity security, which is really important these days, covering everything from conditional access, SAML vulnerabilities, and Entra ID best practices, to his unique take on security as a risk-based balanced act.
So grab your favorite drink, sit back, get ready for an insightful real-world conversation on what takes it to secure identities in the cloud era. So let's talk security. Welcome, Eric. How was that intro?
you really... I hope I can come through. That was a good intro. It's great to be here.
Yeah, that was a good one. So thanks, Puyan, for grabbing all that kind of information because that was a lot. That was a lot. But we're sitting back and together for the MVP Security Insights. That's the go-to podcast for. To get all the information of MVPs around the world, what kind of challenges that we are facing on the different areas, but also what motivates you and what do you do in today's era of cybersecurity. Eric, to start on that, you had an incredible journey from managing Active Directory to being a premier field engineer at Microsoft, and you are one of the Microsoft folks that moved back into a normal commercial job, so to say. So you're now a chief identity architect at Sempris. Can you share a bit how the journey shaped your expertise in identity and access management from starting within the New York court into Microsoft and then move forward?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's I'll say not to spoil things, but I I think in a way, if you worked in identity for a long time in Active Directory, you didn't even know that you were in security, right? I mean, you go back 15 years, you're just a sysadmin managing Active Directory, right? Managing group policy, things like this. But yeah, I mean, so I'll actually say I spent a couple of years before the courts managing AD. You know, this is back in 2003. And I was rolling it out for a cable provider in New York at the time. Then I went to the courts and we were a Novell shop, which I don't think there's any of that left there. Started managing Active Directory, right? We had a bunch of Windows servers, a bunch of IIS and other Windows stuff. Written like a lot of people again back then, you'd sort of manage it all, right? So you weren't just a identity person. And I spent a good long time there. I think at some point, maybe 2012, 2015, I applied for a couple jobs at Microsoft. And in 2019, I had a recruiter reach out to me and, in a way it almost felt like a dream. I don't know how things are in Europe, but in a lot of parts of the United States, if you work in the public sector, people don't think you're necessarily like a fantastic sort of smart person. I don't know how you put it. So in a way, getting an opportunity to go work at Microsoft was such a dream, right? As sort of like a Microsoft fanboy and everything. I tend to ramble if you let me go. So
I don't know if a New York state court is comparable to a Dutch government format. I can't
probably.
I think that's right. One of our biggest enterprises size wise. So I don't know how to answer that question. So, Eric, you also mentioned that you were doing cybersecurity because you are doing for so long time identity. What was actually the realization moment that identity is actually, well, at this moment, maybe some people would say the most important part when it comes to cybersecurity? What was that moment for you?
Honestly, I think it's when I was on the tail end. So towards the end of leaving Microsoft. So when I was there and PFEs and services kind of went through some changes, the role doesn't exist as it did anymore. But at the time, so this was 2019, 2020, the security vertical sort of within Microsoft was being defined. If you worked with Azure AD prior to that, you kind of either fell into like the Azure bucket or the modern workplace bucket, right? For like Microsoft 365. And it was only kind of then that I was like, oh, like it's interesting, right? Like, I guess I never really thought of myself as like a security person necessarily. And then, I'd say since leaving there and especially joining Semperis, basically all we do is identity security. I think I'm a security person. I'll say it's interesting because now a talk that I've given a couple times explores that whole identity is a new security perimeter thing. That's, we like to say like zero trust, but it's almost 13 plus years now that we've been saying it. And right, so I think it's funny, right? Like how long will you stop saying that it's new, right? Because if it's almost as old as my kid, that's a good long time that identity has been as, the core of, security for a lot of companies or a big component of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I, with the shift to identity first, I think a lot have changed in the last few years. So totally agree with that. Yeah. Talking about identity and helping customers within the company you work for at the moment, what is the biggest challenge that you're facing in the role that you have nowadays? Because we talk to other MVPs within Europe, probably other challenges than on the other side of the ocean. So within the US. Probably you can elaborate a little bit on that. Quite probably other challenges, but what do you face on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I would say this role I've only been in a short bit of time, and one of the differences is now I'm actually like more working on our own, you know, enterprise, Entra, and our workforce tenant. So right, the focus isn't just with our customers, but also, you know, ourselves, right? Because we're a Microsoft customer. But especially when I was researching, I mean, I think the thing that's, well, an interesting challenge I would see is that, you know, we get a lot of customers who are concerned with compliance, right? And they're from all over different parts of the world. So they all have their own sort of frameworks that they're interested in, right? And they mostly overlap, but some don't, right? And so then you're trying to, you know, just help a customer understand, like, well, what would a strong password, you know, policy be against something in Active Directory, right? And what some, you know, frameworks in Europe, right? There's the one that, it's at the ANSI there in France, right? That's a pretty popular one versus one that's in, you know, Asia Pacific, right? They may have a different, like, here's what the minimum, you know, length should be, right? And so then when you're trying to build a product that doesn't require a lot of, you know, maybe out of the box customization, right? Like, you're kind of sitting there like looking at all these different things, right? Because there's those in the US, right? We have NIST, and we also have like CIS, which is another big one sort of globally, right? So you spend a lot of time looking at all these different compliance frameworks and trying to like figure out what the difference is, where the overlap is, you know, what makes sense. And also sometimes then, and you might see sort of Microsoft do this stuff occasionally, right? Where you come out with your own best practice, right? And there's other companies, if I take the idea of like the minimum password length again, right? Like I know, I think it was KnowBe4 maybe a couple years ago, they came out and said it should be 14 character minimum or something, right? And it starts a sort of big LinkedIn, Twitter debate or whatnot. But those are definitely well, I think it's one of the challenges that I would see interestingly doing research, so.
Talking about security and research, what kind of topics do you are focusing now on from a security research perspective? Why it's important for the future of identity security?
No, well, I have a couple of projects going on, but I suppose I can't really say what they are because then I'd give it away. I mean, there's a few things that I'm researching in Entra. One thing in particular, it's a bit hard to, I can't even really talk about it, but I'll say the behavior that I'm seeing is not consistent. So I think I have something, but I need further testing. But honestly, I'd say as a researcher, I never felt like I was brilliant in the sense of coming up with something new. But I feel like if you work as a defender for a long time, right, you kind of get to know like how the system works. And then you almost start to see where maybe the cracks are between things, right? Or you'll see a behavior and you're like, huh, like that doesn't seem like that's right. And, you know, I think I've been lucky to have the opportunity to try to take those things again and, you know, sort of try to, dive deeper into the behavior and whatnot. And, you know, like with unauthorized, right. Finding some things. But the other part I was going to say is in my mind, I kind of joke that I'm sort of like the research garbage man because, other people will publish interesting research and that kind of gives you ideas to be like, oh, like, I wonder if there's something more that maybe they didn't find. Right. And you kind of go work off of that. So.
Yeah, that's all the research is how it goes, right? Everything is, everybody's trying to pull something and also prove maybe the other side. So here, you mentioned that you are working more, at least a lot, working with compliancy at this moment also,
through the Europe and Pacific and other regions as well. But I mean, looking to your experience working also in the public sector, but also in the private sector, what is, in your opinion, the most pressing global identity and security challenge that we are having today? Maybe also focusing more on the US side?
I mean, honestly, I think as sad as it might sound, it's still right using MFA. I don't know, you know, if maybe if I'm back on the podcast for, you know, season 12 or something in a decade, right? Like if hopefully I still wouldn't be saying that, but I would say the top three things you still see are MFA, and too much privilege, which I guess there's two parts in there. One is that there's too many like global admins, or there's too much privilege given out. And also then in the Microsoft world of hybrid identity, right? That it's a user synchronized from like Active Directory and or like it's your daily driver user, right? That there's no privilege separation. And you just see this, you know, way too much with a lot of organizations still, right? And I think, again, unfortunately, people ultimately have that it's not going to happen to us mindset until right some sort of incident happens, and then, you know, it's a bit late to kind of adjust your security posture. So
when it comes to MFA, you mean really just like enabling and having MFA, or is it?
I mean, you know, in these days, right, there's additional challenges where now we're talking about phishing resistant, you know, authentication, right? Because the very popular push notification, right, with Entra, where you, right, you go to authenticator app and you type in the number match, right? But it's not actually phishing resistant. No, honestly, a lot of people don't understand that you can throw, you know, evil Genix in the middle there and fish that sort of stuff. But I'd still argue, right, that you know, Alex Weiner, when he was at Microsoft, right, would still, you know, he published a few great articles, and they still, right, push that some MFA, right, is better than no MFA, and finding organizations that you know, still are creating some sort of exclude policy here or there, right? Or they're saying, you know, you're on network or you're on a compliant device, things like that, right? And I think I'll just sort of stay on my soapbox a second longer in that it's also interesting because I've always been a huge Windows Hello for Business fan, right? And Hello for Business has been around again for over 10 years now, right? And it has, you know, that strong phishing resistant auth built into it, but organizations still won't roll out Hello for Business. And it's really easy to do these days. So I'll end my rant there.
Yeah. Well, I must say, Frans, I think you are more working on it. In the Netherlands, the Windows Hello is pretty well adopted, right? From what I see, at least.
I think not only in the Netherlands. I think all Nordics, so Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Belgium, probably maybe a bit less, but that are areas where modern management and modern security is really adopted. And I was mentioned today, don't call it modern anymore because it used to be normal. We talked today about several topics for identity and access management, and when talking about multi-factor, when talking about Windows Hello, phishing resistant and that kind of stuff, that is really adopted well. And what we see also is the bigger companies. So what is big for US, but the bigger companies, so the banking systems, they are adopting that and implementing that quite good, in my opinion. What's next, Bojan? Because I'm a bit.
We wanted actually to talk with Erik about his project regarding the unauthorized. If I summarize it well, it's The main purpose was to expose the paths to privileged roles in NYIT. And I was actually curious, like, in your opinion, when you were doing that research and writing that, what kind of impact did you have in mind? And what is your key takeaway for people that work with it or read about it to learn from it, to understanding it?
I hope, you know, the research is interesting, right? And, you know, I had a lot of overlap. So, I'll step back and say, so when I was at Microsoft, I actually, a bit of backstory on it was, I noticed that when I would deliver Entra on-demand assessments, right, a security assessment of, you know, an Entra tenant or Azure AD maybe at the time, that there was some things you would check that would look for, you know, credentials on some Microsoft service principles. And I never really understood why. And this is kind of back when I still didn't think of myself as a security person. So, the very well-known Dirk Jahn also at the time was writing about this stuff. And, you know, several years later, I'll say when I started working at Semperis, I kind of had all these ideas in the back of my mind that I finally was like, oh, well, now I can like go research this stuff. Because I'll say even when I thought I was like, when I looked at myself as a defender, right, I never really took the time to be like, oh, hey, like, I could contact MSRC about this thing. I could, you know, submit some sort of, you know, potential vulnerability to Microsoft. So I guess where I'm going with that is, you know, I finally took the time to sort of poke at this stuff a bit more. And actually at first I had found something and I reported to Microsoft and they said it wasn't, you know, a problem basically, or they rated it as like a low, you know, like, yeah, we'll get to it someday sort of thing. And so I was a bit annoyed at them. And so I did more research and kind of came up more with like a bit of a method to explore more of these service principles. You know, which again was very much overlapping with a lot of the work that Dirk Jahn's done. And I happened on some other service principles where then I was like, okay, well, let me think of like, you know, different things that could be potentially privileged that we could try to use here. And I just happened to be lucky in a way, right, to come across something that was unexpected behavior. I reported that to Microsoft. My case with them was huge. I mean, it was so long because I was writing up like all the different attack scenarios that I could see, right? And like, here's how an app admin could essentially become a global administrator. And I think only there, right, I proved the case, or I think I proved the case so strong to them, right, that they you know, saw my perspective, I'd say. And yeah, the case was ongoing for a while. And actually, there's a few parts of it I'll say that within the next couple of weeks, I'll actually be able to talk about that I never was able to previously disclose because it was taking them a while to fix stuff. And again, because I'm very, you know, kind of going on and on from your original question, I guess I would just say that I've actually had a few other researchers tell me that they sort of worked off my research, right, in like fine, and they have other things that they've reported to Microsoft. And actually to me, that is kind of like the best feeling. I will say in all this, being an MVP, when I worked at Microsoft, you know, doing research, that it's actually that community piece. And like when you see someone else like learn something from you, or they figure something out, you know, from something that you've done, like that part felt really awesome to hear from someone. Again, I know I've gone a bit off track from your original question, but
I do fully understand.
Yeah.
No, I do understand. Yeah. I mean, there comes once in your career that there are those moments that you have some ideas in your mind, but you share them to somebody else, and that person doesn't reply what you are doing, but adopts what you are what you were telling in their own words and then build on that. And that's, I think, the main goal to achieve in there.
Yeah.
Talking about roles as well, we had a couple of weeks ago, Itai, of course, here on the Talking Security episode, where we talked about a lot of app registration and what they are doing with Defender, where they are exposing app registration with a lot of OAuth user or admin consent. What are your thoughts on that as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think app registrations are... It's a mess. You know, app
registration. Keep that out as well.
Yeah. I mean, right. I honestly, like when I spoke at MC2MC in Antwerp in February. Well, it's funny because I mean, I felt like my talk was very, maybe, I don't know, you'd put it like academic or potentially boring. Right, but it's like one of those things where there's so many potential security problems with app registrations and service principles, and it's a great path for attackers, right, to gain a foothold in your tenant. A lot of people don't understand how they work, which is unfortunate, right? Because I mean, the way that they're implemented in Entra doesn't make it easy to understand. But no, you definitely encounter a lot of organizations who they're over permission on their app registrations. Again, it almost goes back to, I think of a experience I had, maybe 20 years ago, had a website that wasn't working in IIS, and I had a coworker, sorry that I'm he maybe would know who he is. He went and just set full control on everything, right? He's like, things aren't working. I'm just going to just go give everyone full control. And I'm like, that's great, right? And it got the website working again, but obviously now we don't know who's supposed to have what permissions. And you know how that relates to now is, I feel like, unfortunately, you see with app registration, service principles, right, all these things where if something isn't working, right, I'm trying to do something in graph, right, I'll just keep giving it more and more and more permissions until the thing seems to work, but I won't actually try to go understand like what is really necessary, right? And again, right, there's a balance, right? Some sysadmins, right, they're just trying to get the job done, right? And so I don't necessarily blame people, you know, directly for like over permissioning things, but I do think it is a problem, right? Because it comes back and turns into a security issue, you know, when they're compromised. So
what do you, when looking at the future, what if you're a security researcher, we're both and all three are working in security. If someone is moving into school to get things done there, what advice from you to new people joining cybersecurity or identity security? So what advice can you give to them?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, I'd actually say from an advice perspective would be, in the US, a lot of cybersecurity programs don't have really any strong focus on identity. So I would actually say to go, you know, take the SC300, you know, go learn Active Directory, right? Because even though we're all going, you know, modern or normal, right, authentication now, right, so many enterprises still have Active Directory, and right, it still is that, you know, source of authority. It's the record of truth for a lot of enterprises, right? And I know we want to get rid of it, and honestly, I'd be more than happy to get rid of AD, but until it's easy to do that, right, like it's still important to understand, you know, Active Directory as well. And I'd also, you know, maybe just go a bit further and almost, I guess, to the SC300 part, pushing vendor certifications, like, you know, I think Google has one out there as well, like, especially, right, like, I think it's, you know, I work very heavily in the Microsoft area, but there's also times where, you know, I've encountered, you know, Ping or Okta or something, right, and I kind of had to go scramble to learn it. So it can help to not just know about whatever it is you're primarily focused on. I mean, especially if you're looking to do consulting or something. So,
and
yeah, I mean, that's my.
I had a few conversations in the past with people for about new joiners and the learning curve for new people. Back in the days, we had Active Directory. We did a lot of stuff, on-prem identity and so on. How hard is it for, in your opinion, for new people that are joining now that only have access to Entra as a cloud identity and not knowing everything behind?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're trying to teach yourself, right, it's always a matter of how ambitious you are, right? I know it's not necessarily, well, not everyone has the financial means, right? But like, you can go get a Visual Studio subscription, right? And maybe get $100 a month of Azure spend. You know, it's enough to spin up a domain controller, or if you've got a even decently powerful laptop, right? Throw, you know, enable Hyper-V on it, spin up a DC, you know, throw Windows Server on it. Even in these right lab scenarios, you can throw your Entra Connect on your domain controller if you just want to see, you know, what it all kind of looks like. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's still the gap, right? Well, I guess you bring to my mind one other gap is that I think for a lot of us who maybe would say that we're old, right? You kind of, you know, you were a sysadmin, you worked in help desk, right? You did these other things where you also got to experience what like the operational side of things look like, right? From a user account perspective and managing users, which is something that they're also not really teaching in cybersecurity, right? And I think that, I don't know how to best learn that stuff aside from probably trying to tell cybersecurity students that you don't need to go just become like a red teamer, right? Like, it's okay to go become a sysadmin or, you know, an IT pro or something, right? Because you'll probably learn a lot of stuff about troubleshooting and how operations work. That's going to be very valuable in your career later on if you want to maybe change what you're doing. So,
and regarding a future identity security, what major trends do you see shaping the future of identity and access management?
Oh, I mean, right, like, I mean, AI is like a hot topic.
That wasn't in this recording. So finally, it's there.
I suppose I feel like the area with AI that's concerning from an identity perspective is, right, you see in the news, like, you know, companies that are hiring people from, you know, North Korea, stuff like that, where it's right, the impersonation, even here right now, we're on this call, right? And I'm not really me, so to speak, with the way that, you know, you can spoof people. And I think that kind of gets into some of the verifiable credential stuff, which I'm not super familiar with. I mean, I think it's interesting and conceptually I know how it works, but I still would be curious if there's going to be gaps in there, right? From a liveness check and sort of proving that I, you know, am who I say I am. But it definitely feels like it's going to be this cat and mouse game, right? Where there's some new AI thing, right? Microsoft and other companies will release something to combat it, but then usually, right, the attacker is sort of one step ahead and they'll come up with something new. So yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a challenge down the road, but you know, I'll say the maybe bit more boring answer to is just that I still think we have a lot of identity governance problems, right? That identity governance is, again, is not a very sexy thing, right? But like the joiner, mover, lever, right? Sort of life cycle. You know, again, you read in the news too often, right? That someone leaves a company, they don't lose their credentials. Maybe they're mad because they were fired or who knows what, right? And now their creds are out there and an attacker gets in and totally owns, you know, an enterprise. So we have the cool like AI stuff, and also the same problems that have existed for the past 20 years that we haven't seemed to, you know, solve well. So
yeah, but I think you mentioned a very important point regarding identity lifecycle management, identity governance, because we also see in the Netherlands that maybe the bigger companies have owned it. But if yep. we are looking at small, medium businesses and somewhat larger identity governance, it's totally not there. And, oh, there's a new joiner. Oh, yeah, give him the same rights as that person. And then, yep. that person was probably in the worker council. And then you get all the confidential data of the worker council also. So it's really hard to mention that. But looking at licenses and From a Microsoft perspective, if you need identity governance and you need an Entra Suite license for that small medium business, yeah, I need to pay money, so it's too much. So I will do it manually, and then we do it now. That's basically the case.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely. I mean, the license part is always tough, right? And I mean, small medium business could mean a whole lot of different things, right? If you're 50 or 5,000 people. I think one of the toughest sells with a lot of it is a lot of identity security and identity governance in general is like you're spending money to prevent something that you don't know is going to happen, right? Or when. And I think it makes it hard to justify right, the cost until, again, something's happened and now you know what the cost is because you're being ransomware or something like that. So,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Also, looking at the time of this recording, we're almost already half an hour done, 35 minutes. I'm throwing in the AI question to finish a bit up, Puyan. What kind of stuff do you get from AI for Eric?
Yeah, so as every episode, we have also prepared an AI question. Well, let's throw a couple. Well, we do one AI question. We have also some fun questions for you, Eric, later on to close this as well, because I like them as well. But to get on with, you have spent, like we discussed, many years regarding Active Directory, right? Given your experience, how do you balance the need for airtight security identity systems with the reality that too much restrictions can slow down businesses? And on top of that, is it really like an insurance policy when it comes to identity, where you have to choose what to cover and what to risk, in your opinion?
Yeah, those are two good questions. I mean, so to the, you know, the airtight security restricting business, I'll say one thing that tends to bother me with a lot of organizations, or some, I shouldn't say a lot, but some organizations I encounter that actually, they become almost obsessed with aligning to a security framework that doesn't actually really fit them. So in the US, what I'll see is common is, CISA here in the US, they released SCUBA, which I think is very interesting, right? But well, it's open sourced. It was written right for like the U.S. federal government. And you'll see a business that's like, we want to align to this, or it could be like a school district or something. A lot of these things don't, these frameworks don't have the concept of a persona, right? And so this was like actually a real thing I encountered when I was at Microsoft as a customer who, they were a school district and they were having a lot of friction with their end users because their bus drivers, right, that were going to pick up the kids for school, they were setting a authentication lifetime of like 4 hours on things, right? And these bus drivers, right, they just basically go on their phone to like approve their time card and, you know, read the school district email, right? And this right kind of goes to that whole persona thing where a lot of the frameworks don't have like a persona. It's just like, right, like everyone should have this thing applied to them. And unfortunately, businesses seem to be so obsessed, at least again in the US, with like adhering to this framework that they don't actually have to like adhere to, right? That they're doing a disservice to their users because they're over implementing security protocols, or you know, things when they don't need to. So yeah, I do think it can be too restrictive, but I think a lot of times what you encounter is there's a lack of thinking on it. And I'll just say, I think a challenge that I see is because you have the identity team over here, and then you have the security team over here, and the security team doesn't understand things, right? They just look at like some report and they're like, no, right? These bus drivers are supposed to have this thing. Like, and then the two of them just fight until the identity team gets, you know, sick of it and just does whatever they want, right? So yeah, I mean, I could go on for hours about this because I think it's a very interesting like organizational problem, right? That boils down to becoming like a technical sort of security problem. So and that was a long answer to your first question. But I'll, you know, the insurance policy piece, I'll just say, you know, I'll give the classic it depends answer, right? I think it really takes looking at your organization, or maybe getting some help to look at your organization to really understand what you do and don't need, and making informed decisions about what you should or should not cover. So,
yeah, I think amazing. I think the example you gave with the first really covers. I think it's also like having the right enough permissions to do your job, right? It's not about airtighting doesn't mean you are not allowed to do anything.
It'll absolutely
be to be able to do your job. And I think end users at the end will always find a way to get to do whatever they need to do, like developers. You can block everything, they will find a way. They're the best security researchers, they will find a way. I fully agree on that. And focusing on your MVP, your community contribution. If I'm correct, you are part of the ID Pro and contribute to its like the body and knowledge community for the IAM part. How important, in your opinion, because we had like other follow MVPs around the globe, and we asked them as well, like, how important do you think that community collaboration is for building resilient in security? But I think in your case would be more on the identity side. How can we as MVP or non-MVP, like community driven, help organizations in getting in control of their identity?
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, I'll say, like everyone can contribute, right? And I know it's tough to maybe get your voice out there if you're like not an MVP, right? And I sort of felt like I experienced this, because when I left Microsoft, I gained a huge passion there for like essentially, you know, teaching and knowledge sharing. But you know, if you have something to share, or something that you know, or something that you think is, you know, unique or innovative, or your experiences, right? Things that worked, things that didn't, you know, within organizations, right? And it's all the same, whether it's security or identity and security, you know, to share that stuff. And I mean, I think as MVPs, right? Like, well, in my opinion, we have that sort of responsibility of also trying to help amplify, you know, maybe the people that aren't. Because I'll say for the longest time, I would read so much from MVPs that, you know, now are my friends. And I was like, oh, like, you know, I'm never going to be like as smart or as good or, you know, whatever as this person. And I'm not going to go blog about something, right? Because it won't matter. And so I'd say, I think, you know, everyone contributing, you know, with whatever, you know, right. It helps us all. So.
Yeah. Looking at the time, I have a few questions, fire questions left. Okay. So short answers only. What's more satisfying, a flawless Entry ID migration or finishing a major house renovation project?
Oh, these days, well, probably my wife would tell me finishing a house renovation project, since we have a few that I'm slow on.
What's harder to explain to a non-tech friend, conditional access, or why SAML is still relevant?
Oh, those are both hard. Probably conditional access.
Yeah. And your favorite conference city you've traveled so far? And which one is still on your bucket list?
So I would love, well, there's a lot in Europe, I'd say. The favorite? Oh, man. It might have been at the Cloud Identity Summit last year in Cologne in Germany. So.
Cologne, yeah. And last one, knee surgery, recovery, or debugging a broken conditional access policy? What took longer?
Oh, the knee surgery. It still hurts.
And it's still there. But yeah, we walked in Antwerp the beginning of this year. We walked quite along. So that was really good. So it helped, I guess.
Yeah.
Puyan, any other things left?
Yeah, no, I think we are good. We have a lot, and I think we have a lot of questions left for Erik. So hopefully we will see you back on the show, Erik.
And yeah,
can take a separate topic, because I think identity like Azure, I'm more a cloud guy. I always say there's no cloud specialist like Azure specialist, because it's such a huge, huge domain. I think the same is for identity as well. It goes so many levels. So we would love to have you back, and thank you for taking the time, sharing your experience, your journey with our listeners.
Yeah, no, I loved being here. This was a great conversation, guys. So thanks for having me.
Nice. That wraps up today's episode of the Security MVP Insights. Erik, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your journey, your in-depth knowledge of identity security, and your perspective on what it really takes to protect identities in the cloud. And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's discussion, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on LinkedIn, on X, Blue Sky, whatever. Also follow Erik on the different platforms as well, to stay up to date on identity security, but also on our podcast and what we're doing in our recordings. We've got even more great conversations coming up in this season, so don't miss out. And as always, stay safe, stay sharp, and stay secure. Security podcast.